What's up, everybody? We are back again with another episode of Octagon Control. As usual, I am your host, Nikolai Gianti. Alongside is my co-host, Chris Manning. You know, we have a little bit longer of a hiatus than we normally do, just based on when we released the last episode prior to The Ultimate Fighter, the first episode.
As well as
Teixeira Bader. We will get into that rather quickly. We'll also cover Bellator and some pretty big fight news that broke a couple of days ago. So we will have that for you and Bellator. Let's dive in to let's go Bellator first.
Yeah, I'm good for that.
What were your thoughts on how this card played out?
Fun card. I like the pace that they kept. I liked, you know, it wasn't like something I was like totally like excited over. It wasn't like it was the most stacked Bellator card ever. Decent card. You know, Brian Rogers fought on it, and he is someone that we were definitely thinking was, I mean, he's a really nice guy, the guy we've interviewed. Main event, like, Alvaro Shemenko, like, he's not a top 10 guy, but he's fun. But at the same time, this is the main card. You had Jeremy Kimball fighting someone, Brendan Warden, Justin Torrey, Jason Butcher, and Jeeves Santana, Miko Parlo, and Rogers in the co-main, and then Shemenko and Brett Cooper.
And I would argue that out of all of those names, even a diehard MMA fan has really only heard of Butchers, Rogers, Shlemenko, and Cooper.
Yeah, a lot of the, and maybe Santana.
Of course.
And on the undercard, you had the 155 Pitbull brother, Patricki.
And I was very impressed with Derek Anderson.
I was too. But at the same time, this was just, it's like with Bellator, and Shlemenko and Cooper was like a very, very fun fight. It was back and forth. They were trading punches. I actually might have scored it for Cooper. I think I had a 48-47 for him. But like it was either can clinch or make a one, but it was a fun fight both ways. Both guys were in trouble at different points. But at the same time, it's like, what does it really mean?
And it raises an interesting point. You had discussed this earlier, but would you rather be the Bellator champion or, you know, an above average UFC fighter who gets a Joe Lozon?
Yeah, and that
would you rather be a Pat Curran or a Joe Lozon?
And here's the thing. I asked, I tweeted this out. Chuck Mendenhall wrote a really, really good piece on that the Cooper Shemenko fight afterwards, MMA fighting. And I asked him after I read it that on Twitter if he would rather the same question we're about to discuss. And he said that he would rather be the UFC guy winning fight at Barnes. And he actually used Joe Lozon as an example and said, "I've seen his house, not too shabby." And I tend to agree. I mean, Joe Lozon, you know, he lost his last fight, but he's a guy who's won the most fight night bonuses. And even if you're a guy that's won,
you know, even if you won a couple.
Like, yeah, if you won a couple, like, that's 65K per.
Let's say win one a year.
That's like triple the salary you need to, like, almost triple the salary for a four-person family.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather be Joe Lozon. Not in just monetary sense, but exposure. And the fact that I'm better than most of the guys in Bellator still. You know, I'd rather be fighting against the best in the world than be over in Bellator where I might not get a fight for a year. You know, I might have to wait a whole tournament. And now Viacom's controlling everything. And from what we've seen, and we've, you know, discussed this obviously before, Bellator's kind of shady. I mean, they have some shady business goings. We've seen it with a lot of fighters. I think it's cut and dry. I'd rather be a UFC fighter that wins bonuses.
Yeah, and plus, you'll see, even if it's, I wouldn't really know how good of health insurance it is, they do have health insurance. And a guy definitely has some issues with how the UFC pays guys. I think, like, the low, like, I understand, like, the lower guys aren't the guys who draw in the pay-per-views and draw in the ratings. But, and in boxing, guys make, like, piss amounts of more money.
Less money.
But
they make, yeah.
Like, I'm talking about, I meant to say less, like, at the bottom. But at the same time, $6,000 for just to show up, and you, if you get two fights a year, that's not enough as a professional athlete. Like, you should get paid more, and I think they're doing all right. I mean, I don't think they're doing, like, gangbusting, like NFL money, but I think the UFC is doing right. And just a little note here, just someone like Chris Lytle wasn't, like, for example, was an average UFC fighter. Won a lot of bonuses. He made $930,000, of course, like, in disclosed payouts. And he probably got more behind the scenes. And, like, we don't – that's and that's one thing. I want to know how much guys are exactly making.
And you raised that behind the scenes. You know, it's not just fight of the night bonus, knockout of the night bonus, submission of the night bonus. You'll make some more money. Even if you don't win those bonuses, if Dana says you put on a hell of a show – I'm going to throw another 20 or 30 your way.
And you get the guys with pay-per-view points, but at the same time, I really do, I would definitely say UFC. That's what my gut would tell me, but I also do really want to know, like, exactly what guys are making.
But this also segues into the whole Matt Riddle issue. As
Bellator
screwed him.
Yeah.
But we've covered that before. But for Matt Riddle to go on this blast of the UFC and Bellator and MMA and all this, oh, the fight fans say that I suck and that I'm boring and every time we lose we should retire. That's every sport. That's not just MMA. That's baseball, that's football, that's basketball, that's everything. You are going to get crap if you underperform, and even if you perform, GSP gets crap every single fight that he wins.
He's arguably the best champion. He was voted the number one poverty, and ESPN the Mag just did a, like, this little infographic on MMA, I don't know if you saw
it.
He was one of the number one pound for pound fighter by his peers.
So you're going to tell me that, and he got screwed up Bellator, there's no doubt about that. But the article that I had read, I believe it was on MMA Fighting, discussing it, but
MMA junkie Ben Folks.
Yeah, where he sort of covers it. You know, Ben Folks is right, though. I might be reading a different article, but I believe it was someone arguing that, you know, when you're not an elite guy, you're not going to get these top payments. So, you know, Matt Riddle, and let's be honest, Matt Riddle, he can't really argue much. He got kicked out of the UFC because he failed drug tests. The guy knew when he was fighting and couldn't stay clean. He couldn't stay away from weed. How ridiculous is that, that you can't put your profession ahead of smoking weed?
Yeah.
And you can argue the whether, you know, it should be legalized or not. But for now, it is illegal. And if you can't, even if you smoke the whole time to 30 days up to it, where it should clear your system, especially when you're competing as much as these guys are, you know, that's a personal issue with you.
Yeah, and the last thing, and that is a whole other issue that we've delved into before. But the one thing I would say is, as a professional athlete, like, you shouldn't, as someone who's 27 years old, it's kind of disheartening to see someone who, even if he wasn't the best guy, he put on some exciting fights and, you know, has had some, like, the Bellator thing is, like, it's weird to me. He said, I just don't want anything to do with it. And that's, like, kind of a sad thing. And I'm sure that there's a lot of things that have happened in his career, and, like, we know about some of them, but it's still kind of it's a tough thing. It is a dog-eat-dog world, no doubt about it, but it's still at the same time you want to see guys be able to, like, make a functional living.
They also have to remember that this is a completely different sport than say, football or basketball.
Yeah, you don't
this
have, like,
is,
a union.
You don't have a union, and this isn't where, oh, I go to college, I compete in this, and then I go straight into the big leagues. You have to fight in the NAAFS. You have to fight in Legacy or World Series of Fighting, RFA, you know, any of those.
Yeah.
So there's going to be different pay scales, and you know, you earn your money. This is the true way of earning your money. And, you know, it's not fair in every sport. It's not fair in, you know, the big sports either. Mike Trout is probably the best player in Major League Baseball and makes $29.5 million less than A-Rod, who can barely play.
And then you mentioned, like, people who are, like, doing, like, jobs outside of sports
exactly.
That are getting paid, like, much less than other people.
I mean, let's look at, you know, guys in the service. Tim Kennedy would be right there. I guarantee could tell you he probably felt he was underpaid, and I would agree with them that they're underpaid. I believe they make around $15,000-$20,000 a year.
Well, he even said that he was underpaid in the UFC, but I think we're kind of starting to hit the same
deal
here. But
we're starting to
just to clarify my point on this, put the ink down per se. If I had two contracts on the table, and one's from Bellator, and one from the UFC, I take the UFC 10 out of 10 times.
Every time, I don't think it's an argument. Let's move on. Let's get to Glover, Ryan Bader. you know, we'll sort of quickly go through. Joseph Benavidez is a very impressive win.
Yeah.
It's cut and dry. He's the number one contender.
Yeah.
You can give him another fight, but he's going to beat anyone.
Yeah. I might even be going to beat Demetrius again. I really think he's, like, he looked really, really good. He's got power. I know they want Pettis and Grant, but how about Joe B and Demetrius on that December Fox card? I'd be cool for that. I mean, in Sacktown, you already have Faber on there. You're going to probably have Mendez on there. I'd be game for, and I think it's a fight that I think it's the best two flyweights by far.
Agreed. Jacare, very, very impressive. I don't think any of us.
Mad we didn't see the Gator, though. Oh, man, that Gator walk is incredible.
I think he's really making a case for a number one contender.
I mean,
there's
still, I think, against the right guy, there's still some stylistic flaws in his game.
Yeah.
I think someone like Chris Weidman is a bad matchup for him. I think
Chris Weidman is a bad matchup for anyone.
Yeah. I think someone like Munoz could give him trouble. I think someone like, and I think I still think Luke Rockhold
and
maybe lost
his
UFC debut at Belfort, but I think still he stylistically is a tough matchup.
I kind of want to avoid pairing the Strikeforce guys together at the moment.
I do too.
But I agree. You know, I like the name Mark Munoz, and I think he can beat
or like the winner of that fight.
Exactly, and I think Munoz, I would prefer him to win, not just from a how I feel about Bisping's point of view, but from a how that would match up, Jacare, and Munoz. I think that's an outstanding stylistic matchup, and I like that a little more than Bisping and Jacare.
I like either one, though. I think, you know, Bisping, in regards to him, it's not like he's, except for the Henderson fight, he's never just been, like, clocked with one huge punch. I mean, like, the Chael fight, you can make an argument that he won that fight. And either guy, I think, would be fun. I think Munoz throwing steam, maybe, if Munoz in his guard throwing Donkey Kong punches, I want to see how Jacare would defend and go after submissions and that.
I think you forgot about the Vitor.
And I don't even get me. I didn't even want to, like, I don't
Bisping.
Even. I did forget about that. But the thing, it's just like, and it's like then there's just this weird, like, thing with, like, I could see Jacare fighting the winner of Bisping Munoz for a number one contender after Silva Weidman, assuming, like, Anderson, it isn't, like, a situation where they do a trilogy right away, which I don't think is going to, I feel like they're going to move on either way. But then you just have Vitor Belfort, who, you know, after if he goes and defeats, you know, two things about that about his match with Henderson. If he wins, he's gonna say two things. He's gonna thank Jesus for getting him there, and he's gonna, by God, ask for a title shot in a division he's not fighting in right now.
Sounds
about
right.
That's what he's gonna do. So that's just a kind of that cloud hanging.
However, let's move on to the main event of that. Glover Teixeira, Ryan Bader. I think we sort of he showed the issue that I've sort of always expressed with him. He gets hit too much.
He fights like, kind of, now that I think about it? And it's a guy that's kind of his mentor, Chuck Liddell. He plods forward. He's got a lot of power. He can keep the fight on the feet with his wrestling against most guys.
And when that shin starts to go, his career is going to go downhill. Because, and here, we said he got hit too much. Ryan Bader nearly finished him.
And Bader has good power, but it's not like he's an elite kickboxer or a striker like a Gustafsson or a Machida or, even like a Shogun, a prime Shogun.
And, you know, we're calling for this sort of Glover Teixeira next title shot. I think he'll get it because there's not many other options. Because
Phil Davis has been treated like a loser.
Yeah, Phil Davis is beat.
Like, who's Phil Davis going to fight now? I mean, honestly.
Yeah, it really sucks for him. But I think Glover gets the next shot. I think that's going to be a cut and dry Jones, just destruction. You know,
I think Gustafsson would make it farther than Teixeira.
Agreed. So, I mean, Glover really needs to work on that defense. He needs to fight smarter. Yeah. He has the power, but, you know, he's not going to catch John Jones. He's not going to, you know, he has nothing that John Jones really needs to worry about.
Yeah, and then here's, I mean, I think John Jones kind of summed it up perfectly. He's Rampage Jackson with better ground game. I don't think John Jones is, I mean, Belfort almost got him in the armbar, no doubt about it. But at the same time, he's also, like, improved his jiu-jitsu since, and he's been on Twitter, like, working against it. And he doesn't strike me as a guy that's going to get caught in that kind of situation twice. And the other thing is, about Teixeira, he's, in my mind, I think you kind of have to give the number one contender spot. I don't know who else you would give it to if you're not going to give it to, I mean, Phil, you can make, yeah, but that's just, it's not as, and this is more sellable, but then this is his UFC win. 5-0. Kingsbury, okay. Beats Maldonado in an absolute slugfest where he got clipped quite a few times. Beats Quentin Jackson when Jackson was still number 9 in the world, but as we know, it's not like Rampage's prime Rampage.
He did not look good in that fight at all.
He beat James Tohono, who's a nice guy, powerful, but kind of not a top 10 guy, maybe top 15. And then he beats Bader, who is a fringe top 10. He and may not even been ranked at the time, to be honest. But he gave him the next shot early 2014, and I don't know. It's kind of, and because it's at least it's better. It's you're in the situation where either you have to do rematches or you have to do guys that maybe got there too quickly, and neither one's a great option. But I think you go with Teixeira in this case.
And moving on to the event that followed that, we had the premiere of The Ultimate Fighter, and also this week's episode that took place, the episode number 2 with the fight between Juliana Pena and Shayna Baszler. Shocking upset, obviously, Juliana Pena getting the victory. She looked very good. I think that puts her as an early favorite now, and I was actually looking at Baszler as one of the early favorites. I think Peggy Morgan's another name you need to look out for. And Jessamine Duke, you know, a very, very tall bantamweight. I don't know how she makes the weight class, but she's not just tall and lanky. She's a strong girl. You know, she's going to be very interesting. And I think they're really giving a lot of exposure to women. And maybe just, I like the fights in the first episode, but really the second episode is what I'd like to discuss. I like the fights, and I like how they're really exposing the women, giving them credit. The one thing I do worry, and I think it could happen pretty quickly, we've already seen it in the first episode, I think they could really end up making a lot of these male fighters look like giant douchebags. Chris?
Yeah, especially they have the guys, I can't remember his name.
Is it Gutierrez?
Yeah,
Anthony Gutierrez?
Like, just macking on the girls.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, and Chris Holdsworth, who I think is a guy to watch out for the men, because I'm biased. I love, not biased, but I think alpha male. Like, it's a cook on alpha male, and we've seen what they've been able to do. But he said that they also, like, pigged out a lot, and they just didn't show that. I don't know. Like, I like this season more so. I think that the shows were good. Definitely think that we're going to be in for some real reality show moments as the year goes on. I think something's going to happen. I just think it's like it has to. Just kind of the situation, all the emotions and the environment of that house. We're probably going to see some the guys. I think the people that are going to come off worst are the guys and Ronda Rousey. So far it's pretty clear that Rousey are going to come off like a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I think they're both going to look a little insane by the end of the show.
Look at Misha Tate being mild and calm.
She's going to, you know, she tried to play that card. Who are your female favorites? Anyone that I did not mention?
Pena, no. I mean, it's the same. I think Roxanne Modafferi is a name I like to. I think she's at least been around the sport long enough to have, like, a game. But I mean, Baszler was my favorite. Until she lost last night. She'd been a warrior for a long time, you know, had fought Misha Tate in a really, really great fight. That's kind of where I thought, that's who I kind of thought should have been the favorite, but at the same time, she lost him, so shows what I know.
And, Chris, I think it's time to get to the big news.
God,
and I think we can both go on a bit of a tangent on this, but since we both sort of agree in the logic, we have the next coaches for the Ultimate Fighter.
Can I say it?
You can say it.
Just listen to this. So, you know, last night, I want to tell you how I found out about this. I had been in a staff meeting at school, and I look at my phone after, and I get a text from Nikolai, and he says, Frankie, I don't remember exactly what it said, but it was like, Frankie versus BJ. And I was like, what? You read exactly what it says, so we can figure this out. Like, I need to know exactly what you told me.
I believe I texted you to start off BJ Frankie 3.
Oh, and this is, I said, really with a question mark, then OMG period. That's so bad. So, and then I find out it's at featherweight. Okay, so just to clarify here, Tough 19 is going to be BJ Penn making his comeback.
Two weight classes below
what he last fought, and one below where he's at his, we've seen him at his best. And apparently he was 165 right now. And then they're going to fight at featherweight. Nicole, I'm going to give you some advice, okay? If you ever want a title shot, you better goddamn better get Dana White's phone number and text him and tell him you want that fight, because he apparently really likes it when guys text him.
I know.
Anthony Pettis did it. BJ Penn texted him and said he wants to fight Ben Henderson. Text him that you're fired up and want to fight, and you'll get it. That's my advice to you. That's my whole lesson out of this. But really, though, I'm very sad to see BJ Penn back. It's clear that he's past his prime. He's going to drop on two weight classes to try to reinvent himself. And he's coming back at a division he's never fought at and against a very, very bad stylistic matchup for him and a guy who just whooped him the second time they fought.
Who's beat him twice? Okay, let me...
Like, whooped him the second
time. Let me just
start
from the beginning. All right. It's a featherweight bout. He's never fought at featherweight. This is his...
It's interesting.
It's interesting. It's, you know, you look at it and you go, maybe this was the division BJ should have fought at for years.
Like 5
but
years
the,
ago.
But the fact that we're arguing it as BJ Penn looks in great shape. BJ Penn's walking around at 165. BJ Penn's eating healthy. He's training. Didn't
he went on a run this morning?
Don't we hear this same spiel every time he fights? We heard it against Rory. Oh, I'm walking around at 175. I feel great. You know, we've heard it before in title shots. You're going to tell... I don't care how good a shape he's in. He never ends up being the fighter that he should be. He was great in the time when... Yes, the lightweight division was good, but it was not near the level it is now. And I honestly, I probably would have preferred BJ and Benson, just because I think it was a weight class that BJ would have felt comfortable in. He's generally been, he's looked good when he's been focused at 155. And, I mean, that would be one hell. You'd have the guy coming up back from retirement and Benson.
That'd be a very sellable fight for Benson.
It would have been. And you could have easily put that on a free Fox card and possibly made it as the main event of the fight. And here's my other gripe with this. The UFC should have never told us what they almost had with this. Because that makes BJ Penn, Frankie Edgar 3, when BJ's 0-2 already, sounds so much worse. Based on the fact that we could have had Uriah and Frankie. And we all know how much Frankie hates going...
But even for, like, I feel like Faber, I don't know, like, they haven't really announced, like, specific weights why they couldn't agree on a weight.
Well, they actually said Frankie didn't want to go to 135, which was the issue.
Okay, then I kind of get that for Frankie.
For Frankie, and I understand that. But how much, it just sort of sucks the life out of BJ and Frankie even more.
Well, then they're
not
going
to
fight
we could
until,
have.
Like, April?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, it just, like, takes Frankie out for a while, and I guess it's... And from the UFC's perspective, it kind of solves, like, an issue at featherweight because you can kind of, like, put Frankie in a very sellable big fight, but at the same time keep him out of this, like, contender pack that's forming. I prefer him in... Oh, God damn, I want to see Frankie and Swanson so bad. Like, but also, like, I mean, like, this is good for Chad Mendes. This is good for Ricardo Lamas. This is good for Cub Swanson. This is good for...
it's good for a lot of guys.
You know what, dude? You know what I'm just gonna, like, I hope happens. I hope BJ... this is, like, my worst nightmare. Hope if BJ Penn comes out and, like, destroys Frankie, which not gonna happen. You know exactly what's gonna happen. He'll fight Jose Aldo.
Oh, he'll get
that
to the front of the line.
Or it'll be, like, Dana White's, like, two favorite guys. You'll see a video blog of, like, Conor McGregor, BJ Penn, and Dana White racing around in a Ferrari. That's... I mean, this is... We're headed for something here, man. But I just don't... I don't know. I'm not. I'm just. I just don't want. I never wanted to see. I didn't want to see BJ fight Rory. I didn't.
No.
I like. After he got beat up by Nick Diaz and just whooped, that was where I was. I was pretty much done. I think he's just shot worn at this point.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt about that. However, we did get a lot of fight announcement. It looks like Pettis Grant is likely that it could be on the UFC on Fox 9 card.
If Grant, it's
up to Grant.
It's up, and I don't understand if he wants to wait. He's been very, like, pragmatic and calculated about this whole process.
Also, but we have a for sure Uriah Faber Michael McDonald fight, and
doozy.
You and I had both discussed
that
how
a,
much we love
that
fight.
That is a doozy.
It's a great one, and it also looks like Chad Mendes is going to go up against another guy he can body shot to death. So
I say it's either. I'm going to make a prediction. Say it is either. It's going to be one of three people. It's going to be either Ricardo Lamas, it's going to be Chet, Cub Swanson, or it's going to be one-legged Conor McGregor just talking shit.
And I like Mendes against anyone at this point.
Especially one-legged McGregor.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, this is the interesting one that I think got announced. Shogun and James DeGuna.
I like that. I do
and
like that.
I like it.
And plus, and as the undercard of a mark, like,
yeah,
that's a decent fight night card. I mean,
and
you have Hunt and Bigfoot, which will be fun, and then you get this, which
here's
is
the thing. You hear it. At the beginning, when you hear Shogun Tehune, you go, oh, Shogun. But then you think and you go, wait a minute. Shogun hasn't been in shape since Pride. He hasn't looked good since he beat Machida.
He's a little worn down.
He has no knees, and he's going up against a powerful and very, very big light heavyweight. This is an intriguing matchup. If he loses this, he's done. He has to be. There's no way you can keep him around and sell any fight with him losing.
Yeah, that might be like the ditch effort to go to 185 or something.
Or he'll go to Bellator like Rampage and Tito.
I don't know. The thing about Shogun is, though, it's not like him and Dana White don't get along. He's been, like, Dana White loves Shogun. He calls him a warrior every chance he can. But, you know, it's a tough situation. I like the fight, though. I'm very excited about it. I like how that card's shaping up. And then this weekend you get Canelo and Mayweather, and the next week we get Jones and Gustafsson, as well as Burrell and Wineland, which I think is a pretty interesting fight. And then right after that, it's Cain Jr. time, and that's plus Maya Shields. But I mean, we're getting into the meat of the schedule here, and it's gonna be a good fall.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun
and
fights.
Also Frank Mir and Alistair Overeem is gonna go down onto, and so is Chael Sonnen and Rashad Evans at that 20th anniversary show.
Yeah,
so
there's good. I think it would have been great to have it in Denver personally, but
I mean, we don't need no big boys throwing. I mean, I like it in Vegas. We don't need to see any more big boys throwing. We don't need to see Ben Rothwell, Mark Hunt, and
Denver
again.
Getting started on that. However, it does look like they're gonna put together Stipe Miocic and Travis Brown. That's also a fun fight.
It's a big, you know, like I would have that makes me wonder if Barnett's gonna fight Verdum. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of leads me to that like they're trying to book that. But also for Stipe, you know, if he beats Travis Brown, who
title shot,
he's right up there, and he's close, and that makes up for losing Stefan Struve.
And your boy, and I do enjoy Thiago Alves. Looks like he's gonna try to come back in early 2014.
Man, he just
after is that 2 or 3 years off?
It'll be 2 years off at that point. One of the guys that I really enjoyed watching early on in the sport. I'm glad. Hopefully he comes back healthy and. Hopefully he doesn't get thrown right to the wolves. I think you need to take him a little bit slower and give him a kind of he deserves kind of a chance to not fight someone that's just an absolute terror.
And the last thing I want to say, we had the news, I believe Sunday, that Matt Grice was in a car accident, UFC fighter, and he's still, as of now, Thursday, in critical condition. Still in a medically induced coma. From us at Octagon Control, we do have to say our thoughts and our prayers do go out with Matt Grice's family. We hope he can fully recover. And at this point, it's not about fighting again. It's just recovering, you know, as a person and getting back to normal.
Yeah.
So
can't say enough.
There, check out Twitter. There's a ton of places you can donate to him, his family.
Danny Rube is his manager, one of his best friends, is the guy that I would recommend.
Yes.
Danny Rubenstein is his real name.
So be sure to check that out. And to wrap up the show, as usual, you can check Chris out on Twitter at CWMWrites. Check me out at Nikolai_Gianti. You can check out our website,
OctagonControlMMA.blogspot.com.
So that is up and running. Check our
picks.
We'll
put updated. We'll start going to make some fun essay style stuff on there.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. We'll be back next week, and we will see you guys later.